Presented by the Treaty One Development Corporation, this is the Treaty One Nation podcast. You're listening to episode 6, Ojigaj. In this episode, I will be joined with David Thomas, Planning and Design Manager at T1DC, to discuss the Indigenous design concept of the former Kapyung Barracks, as well as the importance of incorporating Indigenous identity into this historical landscape that will become an inclusive community for all people from all four directions. Buju Tansi, and welcome to episode 6 of the Treaty One Nation podcast. My name is Taylor. I come from Broken Head Ojibwe Nation, of course, in Treaty One territory. And today is a very special episode. They're all very special episodes, but I'm very excited about this episode because we get to dive into the design and planning concepts of the former Kapyung Barracks. So this is episode 6, Ojigaj, which translates to build he or she builds dwellings for the people. And I thought it was very fitting considering we're talking about the design concept of the project at the former Kapyung Barracks. The reasoning behind this title is that today we're also going to be joined by T1DC's Planning and Design Manager David Thomas to chat more about the Indigenous design elements of the area and why it is so important to have these designs throughout the 5-block radius in Winnipeg, Manitoba. These are monumental times that we are in as we watch T1DC, Canada Lands Company, and the Canadian government working together to show that, and I quote, dissimilar peoples can share lands, resources, power, and dreams while respecting and sustaining their differences. The redevelopment of the land is going to be just as monumental because it is contributing to First Nations economic development, a focal point for the Treaty One Nation identity and cultures, and an opportunity to demonstrate leadership in sustainable community design. In Canada, we are seeing so many amazing emerging Indigenous designers, and T1DC has been working tirelessly with some of them to set the path towards promoting Indigenous design in the redevelopment. Ways in which they are doing this is showcasing indigeneity through public spaces, public art, housing, community facilities, and commercial projects. But don't take it from me, take it from the experts. Like said, I recently met with design manager David Thomas to speak about the significance of this project and the beauty behind the design. Here is that interview.
I am David Thomas. I am from Peguis, and I am a manager of planning and design for T1DC. And basically, I coordinate a lot of the design issues from the master plan team that we have and different designers that we'll be working with. And a lot of this information has to be, used to communicate to the communities. So I do a lot of that work and just try to inform some of the decisions with some design knowledge and some of the process as well. I work with other consultants that we have working with us at T1DC.
How did you get involved with this project?
About 3 years ago or so, Dennis Meeches asked me to help envision what the site might look like. And at that point, they had like a really schematic plan that they had been working with. They had done a design process with from the seven community, the leadership from the seven Treaty One communities that identified some of the priorities and what they wanted to do with the site. So I basically was a hired consultant at the time, and I took some of the building typologies and sizes of some of the buildings around Kapyung. I kind of folded them into the site.
So you've already jumped into having like Indigenous culture and identity being involved in the design of the former Kapyungs. And I read that The design will advance and demonstrate emerging expressions in Indigenous design. Could you give us more detail as to the meaning behind what is being said here and how Indigenous identity and culture is being integrated into this big project?
I guess in our Indigenous identity, there's these kind of gaps that we have that that haven't been advanced. That there's design ideas and, you know, development in certain ways that you don't really see in, you know, large projects. There, so what we've tried to do is go back to the community, and that's a process that's been happening for years, and try to take the values and kind of take that information, that those values, and work them forward in the project. But also, we have to take like the values of the community and take those forward and try to work them into design expression. And that may be buildings, it may be landscape, it may be like interpretive design, it may be you know, just like themes that throughout the project that fit certain parts of the site.
We can sit here and we can talk about it, but once we see it, it's going to be completely life-changing, right? So, but it's nice to see that all these Indigenous designers are all working together to build this community within a city where everybody can enjoy it. And like one thing that I notice that is obviously really important to the future of not only like our culture, but of the world is using more green energy and utilizing more sustainable products and things like that, right? So how is like sustainability and environmental design, or even having like LEED buildings, how are they a part of this project?
Yeah, right now what we're doing is we've like the I guess one of the big issues that we right off the bat had to deal with, and we will be still dealing with probably for many years, is that the there's a sewer line that runs through the whole site, and it's a combined sewer. So basically it's the sewer from Tuxedo, and it's stormwater that is on the site that just drains like right down through the whole center of the whole site, right to the river. So, you know, if there's too much water in that sewer or in that stormwater system, it overflows and it takes along with it the sewage from Tuxedo right into the Red River, or Assiniboine River. So that happened about a month ago when the river walk there was in the news. I'm not sure if it was at this site exactly, but Winnipeg still has those systems. And I think it was years ago, it was like $1 billion to actually change and our infrastructure in Winnipeg here. So so that was one of the first things that we had to deal with, is like how are we going to drain the site properly without overflowing into the river? And, you know, that's such a big issue. So if anyone's ever seen like our website, we have the master plan, and we have these large ponds on our site. And those are to control the water so that we don't overflow at this point, like sewage into the Assiniboine River. So, you know, that's not only a problem with Capricorn, but that's all over the city of Winnipeg. There's areas that are like that. And this site has been empty and just basically like a field for many like decades. So the infrastructure around the site is not prepared to handle any building actually on this site. So we have a lot of people questioning and saying, well, you know, why are you having lakes? You could make more money by, you know, you're using up space, but that's necessary to, you know, to protect the environment. And so the areas of the site, we have different zones there that, you know, if we ever look at doing like a microgrid or something, that we have areas within the site that could be set up for that. And for definitely we'll be having LEED buildings and we're throughout the site. We're looking at, of course, like with stormwater, how are we going to drain rain, and how are we going to reuse that gray water? There's so many things that we could do. So we're just in a process now, like the master planning has been basically a space exercise, looking at the space, and it's been looking at traffic studies and looking at the density of the site. And all of this gives us reassurance that what we're building inside the site, that the roads are big enough to allow for emergency vehicles. It's going to be allow, like, there's not going to be traffic jams coming off of from the site onto Taylor or onto Grant. So the work that we've done now is a projection of looking at how, you know, how we fit into this, how this project can be developed, like what the constraints are for us to build. And you know, we're planning, charging stations for electric cars. That's actually in our first phase. We're looking at a possible tree, planting trees on the site. And, you know, there's some, we have some ideas. Now there'll be some announcements, I think, as we go along. So we're just getting to the point now where we're really starting to set those in place, those values of what we want the site to be.
In your own thoughts and views, how do you think the Indigenous design concept that we're speaking of is really going to benefit the community, not only in and around Winnipeg, but also the seven First Nations within Treaty One?
Well, I guess primarily the reason that this project is important is because we have a housing crisis is probably, in my mind, it's the, you know, I worked in housing for with DOTC a couple of years ago for about a year. And, you know, and that was with some of the Treaty One communities. And, you know, the housing crisis, if you were to try to address it right now in Canada, it would cost about $75 billion to address the housing crisis. This project is about creating economic benefits that will be spread out over the seven Treaty One communities, and address some of those inequalities, housing and, you know, just funding.
Do you have any favorite features of the design concept?
I think I would be really excited to see an area where we can gather and we have all generations on the site and celebrating and having food and music and, you know, streets with Indigenous names and shops with Indigenous signs and art and performances and, you know, just music and along all of that, our governance, place of governance for Treaty One. And, you know, it's things that you see in Winnipeg now, but to see them in an Indigenous context where it comes from people, where our language comes from the land, where our history comes from the land, and where our values and our sense of family and who we are, it all comes from this place.
Miigwech to David Thomas for joining us. You've reached the end of the Treaty One Nation podcast, episode 6. We'd like to thank you for listening to David Thomas for joining us to discuss the design plans from his perspective and the importance of them. To UMFM 101.5, the campus radio station at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, for hosting the show. And of course, to you for listening, and to all the Indigenous designers involved in the former Cap Young Barracks project. Tune in next week for episode 7. It's an episode that you're not going to want to miss, as I'm joined by Waylon Sutherland.